We're all aware that when it comes to our daily routine, halacha has what to say about virtually every aspect of our lives. From the way we get dressed in the morning, to how we speak, to what we eat, there are halachas, or achayim, yoredeya, and that's what we turn to for guidance on how a Jew should act. What many of us don't realize is the same amount of detail, the same level of halachas, applies to our business dealings as well. And what I'd like to do during this segment is to take a typical residential lease agreement and go through it piece by piece and discuss some of the many halachas, some of the many things to be aware of when executing such an agreement. Now, to begin with, many lease agreements has the rent is due at a certain date, it's due the first of the month. There's usually a grace period. If your payment is received after that grace period, after 10 or 15, the 15th of the month, very often there's a penalty. There's a late payment fee, which is assessed in any rental payment that's received late. Now, this brings up problems of ribbis. Assuming the landlord and the tenant are both Jewish, you, in general, charging a penalty for delaying payment is a problem of ribbis. Just like if I borrow money and we agree that for every month I keep the funds, I'm going to pay a certain amount of interest, that will be ribbis. If I owe rent and I agree that for every 30 days late I'm going to pay a certain penalty, that will be ribbis as well. It doesn't matter what we call it, whether we say it's a penalty or whether we call it interest. At the end of the day, if I'm paying extra because of the fact that I am withholding your money, that is going to be ribbis. Now, there is a very simple workaround, and that is like this. When you're dealing with a true loan, a person borrows money, any interest payment is going to be ribbis and is going to be usur. You borrow $1,000 and you agree that it's going to be returned in a week. If it's not returned by then there's going to be a penalty of $150. That is going to be usur. It's even though it's called a penalty, there's a loan involved and it's going to be ribbis. However, when you're not dealing with a loan, you're dealing with a lease. You're dealing with someone who provides a service. If we agree that payment is due by a certain date, if it's not received by that date, there will be a one-time penalty. That is permissible. That would not be ribbis. However, if the penalty accrues, if the penalty is structured that for every 30 days late, there'll be an additional fee, that is going to be usur regardless. So again, if the lease calls for a one-time penalty, that if the payment is not received by the 15th, there'll be an X amount of dollars, a certain penalty, that's fine. But if the penalty kicks in for every 30 days that this payment is delayed, that will be ribbis and that will be problematic. Now, there's nothing wrong with charging this one-time penalty for each month's rent. Now, as if January's rent is late, you can charge the fee. If February's rent is late, you can charge the fee a second time. What you can't do is, if January's rent is not paid until March, you can't charge an extra fee for January's rent. Each payment can be assessed with a fee one time. Each month's rent, each separate payment, again, can get the fee, each of them can get the fee one time. So at the end of the day, if one payment is made 6 months late, or whether it's made 1 month late, it will make no difference. He will only pay the fee one time. However, if 6 months, each month, he is late on that month's rental payment, there you can charge a fee for each and every one of them. Now, a second ribbis issue can come up with a security deposit. When a tenant moves in, he typically gives the landlord a deposit. This deposit, the security deposit, is, in a sense, a loan. The landlord takes the money, and assuming that there's no damage, when the lease is over, when the tenant leaves, he returns the deposit. legally, in many states, he has the landlord has to give the tenant the interest on the money. So this again sounds like a ribbis problem. If the landlord and tenant are both Jewish, the tenant gives the landlord the $1,000 deposit. When he moves out, he gets $1,100. And this would appear to be ribbis. Now, as a matter of halacha, it usually is not a problem, because one of two things usually happen. If the landlord puts the money in a segregated escrow account, then the landlord never borrowed money from the tenant. It was the tenant's money. He gave it to the landlord to put it in an escrow account. Does that money belong to the landlord? Has he borrowed the money? Is he necessarily liable for that money? Can he use the money for himself? No. He has no rights to use it. He's simply an agent, in a sense, to put it in this bank account. All the interest that accrues is accruing on the tenant's money, and it would not be a problem with ribbis. Ribbis needs some element of a loan. In other words, if the landlord would take these funds and commingle it with his money, he would have the right to spend the deposit, then it would be a loan. And then returning any interest would be problematic. But since, legally, it has to be put in an escrow account, the landlord has absolutely no right to access or to use this money until the end of the lease or until there is some sort of breach of contract that gives it to him. So therefore, any of the interest that accrues is accruing on money that rightfully belongs to the tenant. The interest belongs to the tenant as well, and you will not have a problem with ribbis. Now, another halacha shaila that comes up is that, let's talk about the flip side. A tenant moves into an apartment. He knows the rent is due the first. There's a grace period. Now, usually the grace period doesn't mean that you have the right to wait until the 10th day of the month. It simply means there's no penalty if you get it in before the 10th. But your obligation, your hischaivus, is to pay rent immediately. Now, we know when you hire a worker, there's a concept of bal talin. There's a mitzvah v'yomei titin scharai. There's an obligation to pay a worker immediately when he finishes the job. He does the work, he's entitled to get paid. By paying him, you're fulfilling the mitzvah b'yomei titin scharai. Withholding that pay is a violation of bal talin or l'savei lav hashemesh. According to many poskim, this applies to houses as well. It's a bit of a machlokes whether bal talin applies to karka, but first of all, it's a suffix d'araisa, we're machmer. Second of all, a house is tol shalom saif chubroi, so there's another tzad. So as a matter of halacha, we're choshed for these shitas, and bal talin applies. Now, what that would mean is that every time you pay your rent on time, you're going to kaim a mitzvah. If you delay payment, not only are you breaching the contract, but you're violating a law of d'araisa. However, in the case of rent, things are not quite as simple as it sounds. When a worker finishes the job, he's entitled to get paid. B'yomi titin schari means that the day he finishes the job is the day he needs to get paid. What happens if a worker, before he begins, negotiates with his employer and says, I want to get paid a week before I finish the job? And the parties agree. Now, there's no question about it. You have to, if that was the agreement, the employer has an obligation to honor that agreement, to honor his commitment, and pay on the day he committed to. But say he misses that payday, and instead he pays him the last day when the job is completed. Has he violated Yom Titin Scharad? Has he violated Bal Talin? The answer is no. Bal Talin is when you miss the Zman of the Torah. The Torah says pay when the job is done. If you don't, you violate a Nisr. Not paying a week earlier may be a breach of your contract, but it's clearly not a breach of the law of Bal Talin. When a person rents a house, the klal in halacha is, Ein stiris mishtalemes al lubsayf. Rent is due at the end of the term, at the end of the month, at the end of the year. Today, that's not what's done. The minhag and what it says in every contract is that it's due in advance the first day. Now, the parties agree to it. There's a contract. Clearly, there's an obligation to honor the contract and to pay by the first of the month. But if a person doesn't pay on the first of the month, he hasn't yet missed the Torah's Zman. He hasn't missed the B'yoymoy Titin Schari, the day that al pi halacha he's responsible to pay. And therefore, Baal Tolin would not apply until the end of the term, the end of the month, the end of the year, whatever it is. That's where the issues of Baal Tolin would apply. Now again, I'm not coming to justify paying late. There's a contractual responsibility which has Tokif and Halacha. It's clearly a Loi V'Rosh of Lo Yishalem and Al Tomer L'Re'acha. However, this added severity of B'yom Titzin Scharei and Baal Tolin would not apply to a lease at this earlier stage. Now another group of issues is that a lease agreement calls, there's generally many clauses in this agreement, and there are many responsibilities that the tenant accepts. If a visitor comes in and causes damage, the tenant accepts liability. Now, al pi halacha, say there was no contract, and a visitor comes, you have a guest, and that guest is mazik, he damages the property. The landlord would not have a claim against the tenant. The tenant did nothing wrong. He wasn't negligent. He didn't cause the damage. The claim would be against the visitor. Now, in most matters, although that's true, if the parties contractually, the tenant wants to accept liability for his visitors, nothing's stopping him. In a davar sheba mamon, you want to accept liability, go right ahead. However, there's a concept of asmachta. And again, the details of asmachta are going to be discussed in another shir. But in the nutshell, asmachta is when I accept a contingent liability because I'm really counting on the fact that it's not going to happen. Speculation, somewhat of a gamble. These obligations are not binding in halacha. And therefore, technically, al pi halacha, if I tell a landlord that if any of my visitors causes you damage, that would technically be an asmachta, and technically would not be binding. And if damage does occur, the landlord's recourse would be against the visitor and not against the tenant. Now, although this is true as a matter of halacha, today there is a minhag to accept such liabilities. Virtually every lease agreement has such a clause, and in these situations there is clearly a minhag to honor such clauses. And in such situations, there are many achrayim that say we apply the concept of minhag mevatel halacha. We say that because the custom today is to accept these clauses and to honor these clauses, they are in fact binding in halacha. And regardless of the fact that it's asmachta, many poskim will honor this agreement and will be mechayiv and obligate the tenant to take liability for any of his guests. As a practical matter, if you're dealing with frum Jews, it's a good idea to add to the end of the lease an agreement validation. There are different clauses or different texts that can avoid problems of asmachta. These are readily available, and you can contact Bezin Mesharim at 905-732-905-3388 or by email am@mesharim.org. They're readily available. You can get it elsewhere. But it is worthwhile to include some sort of text that addresses these asmachta issues, just as an extra level of protection that if there ever is litigation, there's absolutely no question, and you avoid the problem completely. Thank you.
This presentation has been brought to you by the Orthodox Union in conjunction with the Beis Chabad Institute of Talmudic Law, the Center for the Study and Practice of Monetary Halacha.